The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Thank you for listening to Spin, the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish Rally School. For your chance to experience life behind the wheel of a rally car, head to drive.dirtfish.com to find the course that's right for you. What are you waiting for? We're right here waiting for you.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Spin the Rally Pod. And this one is a post-rally chilly BOBO. Spin the Rally Pod with myself, Colin Clark, and, of course, our chief... What are you now, David? Chief editor, chief chefy McChef.
Just left the Dirtfish house. I am chief bottle washer, done all the washing up.
And that's not quite true.
And
I did a whole lot of washing up over the weekend. I washed the most importantly the porridge pot this morning before I left.
You did a very good job. I thought I was kind of welded to it. That stuff.
No. Do you know what? I fed it. I didn't waste any of the porridge.
You gave it to the dogs.
I gave it to the dogs. I really did. What are you, David, these days? Head of marketing? No, head of media. Head of media. He's probably head of marketing as well. David Evans, good to have you. David, we are making our way to the airport after witnessing, you know, a really, really positive return to the championship for Rally Chile.
Yeah, great, just fantastic event. I have to say it was a winner. Obviously, it was supposed to come back in 2020, yeah. But there was a mixture of global madness with COVID obviously going on. And I think... There were some difficulties with the event and what have you, and with Chile and some political business going on.
Well, that's a very low-flying paraglider just going over our heads just now. Goodness me.
But all of that, forget all of that. Absolutely forget all of that, because what we've seen this week is just fantastic. It's an absolutely brilliant return. The event's delivered on every level, particularly the sort of sporting side.
Yeah.
To have those roads, to be able to drive roads like this is fantastic. And from talking to everybody, this is the tip of the iceberg here, isn't it?
It's incredible. It's incredible.
The world's biggest forest enterprise, if you like. So the world's probably more forest roads in and around Concepcion than anywhere else in the world. So it's amazing. The fans were legendary on Thursday night in Los Angeles. The whole thing. They smashed it out of the park.
They really did smash it out
of
the park.
Apart from traffic, which was a nightmare.
Traffic around the service park was a nightmare. But, you know, that's a nice nightmare to have. The fact that so many people wanted to come see the cars up close and personal. It's a really nice problem to have. It wasn't such a nice problem to be in the middle of. But anyway, you're quite right about the roads and the stages. We talked with Alberto Heller, David, at the end of the event. And he said, yeah, you know, he's from Los Angeles. The ceremonial start, it moved a little bit. It was 400 metres.
No, it was 300 metres.
On Thursday night. And tonight it was 100 metres. So maybe his school had moved a little bit.
His school had got 200 metres closer. But those are the sort of semantics. We need to turn right here.
I'm not sure. We need to turn right somewhere. This one
for
or the
fuel
next
station.
One. Yeah, exactly. Those are the semantics indeed. But what Alberto said was, yeah, you know, you do have this second biggest logging company in the world based here and all the forests here around Concepcion and Los Angeles. But he said, you go further south in Chile, and you've got even more roads and even more variety. Really, you know, that for me has been the absolute highlight of the weekend, was just how good these stages were. We expected them to be good, but they were good, they were challenging, and they were really, 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 in terms of delivering a sporting spectacle, they were absolutely on point. So,
and from an organisational perspective as well, Cole, you know,
they
were very, very smart in the fact they bought Alain Pinasse.
Yes.
To work in as a sort of consultant for the event. They had Ian Campbell as deputy clerk of the course. These are experienced hands.
And the ex-boss of, not the ex-boss, but the ex-team manager from Hyundai.
Yeah, Pablo.
Pablo.
Yeah, no, and they've seen everything. They've been around the world, they've seen it all. And they understand how to deal with everything in a very calm and rational fashion. There were issues, of course there were issues. Inevitably, every event is going to have some issues, some re-teething problems, if you like, when they're coming back into the championship. But it was seamless.
It really was. It really was seamless. And, you know, as I said, in terms of the sporting spectacle, it was just quite remarkable. It was fantastic to see. Let's start, David, then, you know, in summarising, you know, the performances, driver performances, team performances. Let's start, for the first time since February, with our winners, M Sport and Oit Tanak.
Yeah.
They got it right. There's no question they got it right when you required a bit of thinking, a little bit of knowledge, an awful lot of experience. That 100%. Tire choice on Saturday morning between Tanak and the team, they got it right.
Yep, totally. That was the foundation, wasn't it? Because the strategy that they found, obviously, was, in fact, according to Oit, it wasn't optimal because they could have actually taken six hard tyres, which... At the time, we were sort of scratching our heads because it was quite early morning. It was still, before the sun came up, it was pretty chilly.
Really chilly.
And we were expecting soft tyres to be the order of the day. The Friday, we'd seen more softs, but obviously the road was quite different on Saturday compared to Friday. Much more abrasive road. And it was exactly the right tyre to take. And they did a fantastic job in taking that package and managing it. But for me, it was Saturday afternoon where the win was absolutely confirmed. Tanak didn't give anybody a look in, did he?
That
was
absolutely
where everybody was on the hard tyre. Everybody was on pretty much the same bit of road. And Oit just went out there and showed total domination in the fashion of what we were used to seeing in 2018, 2019, when he was at the absolute height of his power and he was winning rallies.
Absolutely.
For fun,
absolutely. And you know, it was enormously impressive, his drive this weekend, because every other driver had a moment, numerous moments, and one or two had very big moments and one or two had very big crashes. But Tanak was middle of the road. He kept it absolutely... Middle of the road sounds pedestrian-like, doesn't it? It was far from that. But he was so, so accurate. He was so in control. You know, it didn't even, from what we watched, he didn't even have... You know, a loose end at any times. It was all just completely as you would expect from Tanak at his very best. And I think what it's confirmed, and it's reconfirmed, is that there's nothing missing from Oit Tanak. You know, he's not lost anything in these years that he's been fighting to regain that form that, as you say, he showed in 2018 and particularly in 2019, where he was intimidating. His presence on the start list, his presence at the start line of each stage, his presence in the service park intimidated his opposition, because he was so, so self-assured, so confident that he was unbeatable, that he really was
totally
unbeatable. And it's still there. It's still very much there.
It was in the fashion of a Sebastian Loeb or a Sebastian Ogier at the height of their power as well. Like you say, Colin, it was that imposing presence that as soon as the rally started, if Oit Tanak was out front, then he was going to win.
Yeah.
I remember that classic Argentina, I don't remember if it was 18 or 19, where he had the mistake early on and he just powered back through. And that, for me, was one of the drives of his life. And you just knew he was going to win that rally. And in a way, once you got past Friday, you just knew he was going to win this. Once you got past Saturday, obviously into Sunday, you just knew. But for me, it was not really in doubt. I think... There have obviously been issues with the Puma. We've seen that. You know, we've seen the issues in Estonia and in Greece and what have you. I think when Oit starts a rally, there is always a degree of caution, a degree of... I don't know how you'd put
weariness,
it.
Weariness, not weariness, no.
Yeah, we're kind of weariness,
a bit
exactly.
Weary, yeah.
Just, and you're just ready for kind of anything to happen. And as soon as he was into his stride... Friday afternoon through Saturday, he just galloped away. You know, he understood that the car was cool, everything was going to work, and there'd been no issues with the car. Okay, small hybrid thing on the Friday with the heavy landing that injured Martin slightly. Beyond that, nothing from what we can understand. Certainly nothing that we found out about.
That's an interesting point, because, you know, if we look back through stage end comments, really, right back to the start of the year, I think this is about the only rally where he's not had something to complain about with the car. And he hasn't. He hasn't talked at all about the performance, about the reliability, about the handling of the car. And that's what happens when you're at the front and you feel that you're in control of the event, which he has been very much since which stage? You know, it was very early on, wasn't it?
It was
that
early
he took
on
the lead in the rally.
Elvin was quickest on the first, and then Elvin got a bit of a chance to run at the front. But then when we got to the afternoon on Friday, and Elvin struggled a bit with the grip in the car, Tannock was just there.
Yeah.
He was just there, and he was absolutely on it.
So, at Oit Tannock, M Sport, fantastic job. While we're on M Sport, we need to talk about Pierre-Louis Loubet, because, you know, Loubet has been very stop-start this season for him. A few mistakes, a few unfortunate issues in Greece. Was very much an unfortunate issue. Didn't even make it into the opening stage. An enormous disappointment for Loubet in Greece, David. And he came here with hope, with genuine hope. He knew he had a good road position on Friday. And for the opening two stages of the rally, you know, he was doing a good job. And then that mistake. You know, there's no question. There's absolutely no question it was a mistake inside the car. Whose mistake it was, well, you know, we'll let the boys decide that. But it was a mistake inside the car. And he, at this point in his career, he really cannot afford those sorts of mistakes. He needs to be finding some consistency and some pace.
The consistency has to come. The mistakes have to go.
Yeah.
Again, he had a great place on the road. This was his kind of last, well, it was everybody's final opportunity on gravel this year to show what they can do. And he dropped it.
Yeah.
It's difficult, isn't it, when you see a driver have a massive shunt like that. And it was a proper one.
Yeah.
It was a big, big accident.
Ooh, yeah.
And if you haven't seen it, go back to dirtfish.com. You will find a full analysis of exactly what happened there. It was a monster.
Yeah.
You kind of feel badly about being critical of the driver. It was a mistake. Wherever the mistake came from, wherever within the crew it came from, we don't know exactly what happened. It was a mistake. You cannot make mistakes at this level.
And not at that speed on these stages.
The consequences are so, so high.
Yeah.
It's a huge disappointment, because this was a golden opportunity. As we say, with the place on the road, he could, potentially should have been looking at a podium. Granted, he didn't have a huge amount of seat time. You know, he'd been out of the car for... didn't turn a wheel in competition in Greece, did he?
Nope, he did not.
So yeah, it's... Oh, no, he did... Or did he? Did he do the
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. He did get the first stage.
Special.
It was the first, the second stage.
But he didn't turn a wheel on gravel.
He didn't.
Loubet needs to find something in the next couple of events.
And, you know, I like the look of Loubet. I really do. And I do think there's some talent there. And there is some potential there. And he has progressed. But it's frustrating. It's frustrating because, you know, there are a lot of young drivers who have been in his position before. And you know, you need to start showing some consistency. And on top of that, you need to be able to show the consistency and then the ability to build a little bit of speed. I think Loubet showed that at a certain pace, he can give us consistency. But every time he tries to push to find that little bit more pace, it goes wrong. And that's the worrying thing for me with Loubet. It's that step up from that good, clean, tidy, neat, consistent pace to a challenging pace.
Yeah.
And he's struggling to find that.
He is. And again, it's a difficult one for M Sport, isn't it? You know, the whole team came here with great potential for a win. You know, potentially even a double podium. Tannock always has a chance to win. And Pierre-Louis could have been on the podium as well. I wrote a piece about Tannock on Sunday, talking about how I kind of felt that he needed to be, I guess, more gracious with the team. You know, I am Oit Tannock's biggest fan. I've always been a huge fan. I love the totally single-minded nature of the way that he drives, and the fact that he won't be derailed in his thinking or in his pursuit of absolute excellence. And there is a huge aspect of that, Colin, that he gives the best and he demands the best.
Correct.
And it is difficult if you're not feeling that you're getting the best. And that's where he's been. You know, he's felt frustrated that he's not perhaps getting the best out of M Sport. There are very, very good reasons. And my point with this piece was to point out that there are reasons for this. You know, there are big financial restrictions on what M Sport can and can't afford.
Correct.
They're not in any way in the same league as Toyota or Hyundai. And it's naive and quite frankly stupid to think that they are. Mm-hmm. And I'm not 100% not saying Tanak thinks that. He doesn't at all.
No, he's fully aware. Yeah. When he went back to M Sport, the limitations of joining a non-factory team.
Yeah.
There's always going to be limitations.
Yes.
And he knew that, and he was fully aware of that.
Yeah.
And I've read your article, David, and I thought it was a fair and balanced article. It was an article that was an opinion piece. And, you know, I share your opinion. I absolutely share your opinion, and as do a lot of other people. But we are not walking in Tanak's shoes. We are not walking in the shoes of a world champion. And I have seen some behaviour that you might even call shocking from world champions in other sports. But that is what is required at times.
Yep.
That single-minded, selfish dedication to your cause. Doesn't matter about anyone else's cause. It is your cause. And you have to be that focused. You have to be that selfish. You have to be that hard and demanding. Yeah. But at times it's not nice to see. And but there's no question about that.
It's not nice to see. But as well, my point in the piece was to question how motivating that was for the team. And I understand, you know, he wants to be hard, and he's right to be hard on the team, because he was hard on Toyota and he got a world championship out of it. He was hard on Hyundai, and that didn't work out so well, and he left a year ahead of the end of his contract. For me, it was never really going to end well if he was going to be hard on M Sport, because Oyton knows, as well as anybody knows, it's a family-oriented team, and they are very... Everybody puts their arms around each other and they look after each other. And I just felt that you perhaps compare and contrast with someone like, I don't know, a Carlos Sainz or a Sebastien Ogier when he was at M Sport. There were the same issues, perhaps not to the same extent, but their way of dealing with it was to keep all of the stress internalized and in the public. Very rarely would you get any kind of criticism.
And you know, to be honest with you, Ogier embraced the whole family spirit thing, and he worked from the inside, from the inside to change it. Whereas Tanak's way of doing it, and as I say, it is Tanak's way, and it's worked for Tanak in the past, and it's worked for other great champions in the past. His way was to be on the outside, dictating the way things went from the outside. Whereas Ogier was very, very different,
Who's to say who's right? You know, you're quite right. Walk in Oyton Tanak's shoes. We don't. And he's the world champion.
Yeah.
And we're not.
Well, no, and that's it. We don't have the mentality to be world champions, you know.
No.
And that's it. But I thought your article, David, was very, very fair. Really very fair.
I think it's a lot, you know, and I do take a lot of criticism for the kind of personal relationship that I've got with Malcolm, also with Rich Milner, with the whole team. It's nothing to do with them being a British team. It's to do with the fact that I've worked with that team for my entire career.
And they're thoroughly good people.
Absolutely, Cole. They're good people, and you do feel a level of kind of protection towards them, if you like. And
you know what? Sorry, David, to interrupt you. It's normally you that interrupts me. You know, you look at Tanak, and he's hard as nails. He's got a core of steel.
Yeah.
You look at Malcolm Wilson, he's harder. He is harder. He has, never mind a core of steel, he is built of steel.
Yeah.
You know?
If he's not, well, when his steel flexes slightly, there's John Steel.
Yeah, there's John Steel with the real steel. The real steel is there. But, you know, and I will tell the story until the day I die. You know, I was not well a few years ago, really not well, and I missed 3 or 4 months of the WRC, maybe more, it might have been nearly 5 months. And I will never forget the emails that Malcolm Wilson sent me.
Yeah.
Because that is the sort of person he is.
Yeah.
You know, he sent me and I remember it was, one of them I got was the Saturday night in Finland, and they were leading the rally. And he took the time, and you know how busy these team principals are, how, you know, focused they are. He took the time, not just to send me one or two lines, but to send me a proper email just saying, this is what's going on in case you missed it. Look forward to seeing you back soon. Hope your recovery's gone well.
Yeah.
How, just on a human level, just how good is that?
It is incredible.
That's him, you know.
But equally, Cole, I've been exposed to some of that with Tanak.
With Tanak, I've seen that.
Thoroughly decent people. So, you know, I am overprotective with M Sport. I appreciate that. But also, I totally appreciate Tanak.
And like you, you know, I think everyone at Dirtfish is a massive Tanak fan. I think everyone in rallying is a massive Tanak fan. And
you've got to be.
Because we're fans doesn't necessarily mean we always agree with the way that things are done.
No.
You know, and that doesn't follow. It doesn't follow because you're a fan, you agree with everything. You're allowed to have a view on it. You're allowed to have an opinion on it. You're allowed to disagree.
You know, I'm not really sure I fell out with Colin McRae, but I had serious words with Colin McRae, right. The same with Richard Burns. Carlos Sainz absolutely terrified me, still does.
Yeah.
You know, you are cankering a little bit.
Schwartz
as well.
Used to terrify me.
Yeah, I couldn't really see that. He's a lovely fellow.
He's a beautiful man. I love him now. But he used to terrify me at stage ends.
But, you know, you have these relationships. It's difficult sometimes. Yeah. But ultimately, they've done it.
They've won
Rally Chile. That's the only thing that matters now.
Yeah.
And let's see what the last two rounds bring.
Yeah, on to tarmac for the last two rounds. Shall we mention the other two M Sport drivers now, or should we move through the teams? What do you reckon?
Let's not talk about them now.
Munster and Heller, Alberto Heller. Do you know what? You know, they both, I think, had very decent rallies. I was impressed by Munster, though.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect. I thought, are we going to see him? You know, what are we going to see from him? Are we going to see mistakes? Are we going to see your pace that's maybe a little disappointing? No, didn't see any mistakes and saw reasonable pace from Munster and reasonable potential from Munster. He battled with quite a few issues over the weekend, but he dealt with them.
He did.
I liked the look of Grégoire Munster this weekend. I thought, is he a lad with potential? Well, clearly he's got potential. How much potential is the question? I don't know. And that will all depend on how well-funded he is. But he looked calm and in control in that car, and that was a massive positive.
I would say it's too early to judge.
We've seen worse in debuts.
We've
seen a lot worse.
But we've seen him on one rally.
Yeah, but I like the look of him, is what I'm saying, on that one rally.
Yeah.
But you got some money.
Where is it?
I used to be in charge of the money, but now you've got the proper notes. You've got the bundle of notes. No, I'm not getting a million coins out of here.
Yeah, no, they're all hundreds.
How much do we need? 1,400. Is it 100s? Yeah,
here we go.
100. Well, tell me what you thought of Heller and Munster then, while I count these coins.
Munster was good. Good, you know, there was base there. But for me, the base with Grégoire Munster, the thing that we had to see here was the ability to step up from Rally 2 to Rally 1. Not to be afraid of the car, not to be afraid of the aero and the hybrid and all of that. To get in it and give it a kick, you know, to give the ball a kick. He certainly did that. Now we need to see what he can do moving forward. How much is that?
1,500 pesos.
You're a very good man.
1,500. So if it's 1,000, you take the big one away. And if it's 1,450, I think that's what it is, then you give the lady all of your money.
That's a
500 pesos. Yeah.
Alberto Heller, brilliant. And just fantastic to see him on the stages, running first on the road through Saturday, Sunday. But I've got to say, I think his highlight may have come on Thursday night.
But David, this for me is what we are lacking in WRC. But not just private drivers. It's private drivers from the country that we're rallying in. It brings so much more attention, so much more excitement, so much more interest. You know, Alberto Heller, you know, clearly a local Chilean driver, a very decent driver in the Chile National Championship in a Rally 1 car. The fans went wild for it, and they came out in their tens of thousands to see it. And we are missing that big time on so many rounds these days. David, what's your problem there? You're furiously trying to clean your trousers.
Spilled some avocado on my trousers.
No.
Hola.
1,450. I think we've got this right. 1,500. Give her the big one. Oh, no, it says 1,000 there now. Ask how much.
1,000.
Ask how much. I don't know. Here we go. Let's see what it is. Is it 1,450? Is it 1,000? He's giving her the popcorn.
Oh, and you can have that as well. Okay. Gracias.
We miss it. We miss it, and we really do have to look at ways, and I know Malcolm Wilson is very much at the forefront of this, look at ways of making these cars affordable.
Just give national heroes an opportunity to fight. It's the same.
Is that not, we talk about how to promote this championship. Is that not a relatively straightforward...
Of course it does.
It's a win-win, win-win-win. You know, the promoter, the FIA...
To when Colin McRae was around, Mark Higgins used to do Rally GB pretty much every year. Whenever he got the chance to do it in a proper focus, it was an incredible story.
You
know, he'd be running fourth, fifth overall. Just fantastic for national press. Great. It's exactly what you need. Same here. Take Alberto Heller. I was talking to a couple of Chilean journalists, and they said this is almost front page news in Chile.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? How great is that for our sport?
Without that, without him competing, you know, it's another sporting event. Yeah, it's a big one. And in terms of Chilean sport, having a round of the World Rally Championship is huge. But, yeah, it's...
Yeah,
we need it. We absolutely need it.
So what do we do? Can we persuade the powers that be to come up with a scheme whereby national champions qualify for a drive in a Rally 1 car on their event? Is that a little too simplistic? You know, if you're Finland's national champion and you're not a regular WRC driver, your prize for winning the Finnish championship is...
There's all sorts of incentives, you know, that you can bring, Cole. There's all sorts...
That would win for everyone. We a win for M Sport, who we know require something for next year. It would be a win for rallying. It would be a win for everyone. And not enormously expensive.
For me, the first thing we need to do is allow these cars to run without hybrid, because that makes them considerably, I was going to say cheaper, considerably
more
less expensive.
More affordable.
Yeah, and there's a lot that needs to come from the FIA in the next, ideally before next year.
Mm.
We need to have these people back, these local heroes.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely
a big part of the story. That was quite parochial for me to talk about Higgy, but, you know, you go to
Argentina,
Marcos Legato,
Jorge Ricaldi, Argentina, you know.
Exactly.
You go to Australia, you know, Nathan Quinn in the Mini, how much attention did that bring? It was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
New Zealand, Possum Bourne, all of these.
Yeah.
There's so many stories.
That's the point, isn't it? You know, for our generation, we talk about all of these people. But next generation, who are they going to be talking about? There's not the legacy now.
There isn't. You're absolutely right.
Let's move on.
Let's move on to Toyota. And first of all, we have to say many congratulations to Toyota for wrapping up the Constructors' Championship here. It is number 7, is that right, David?
Number 7.
You know, it was kind of a, oh, and you've won the Constructors' title at the end of the weekend. They've won the Constructors, and it has been a great year for them. But, you know, this event was not a great event for them.
It wasn't a
Don't
great
disagree
event.
With me. No, it no, wasn't a great event.
It wasn't a great Saturday morning. I think if you take that out, no, I mean, it wasn't. Calais struggled. It's a real shame, I think. Calais had that small off on Friday afternoon. Without that, he would have been much closer. Okay, he would still have had the issues on Saturday morning. Actually, that's a bit of a nonsense.
He shipped a load of time Saturday morning with the problems with the wear on the soft.
They were absolutely scuppered as soon as they decided to go with softs.
Yeah.
That decision, which is made on Friday night, because obviously there's no Saturday morning service.
Here's something, David. You know, we talked to Jari-Matti Latvala about this event, and obviously he's still a little bit miffed at the fact that they were comprehensively out-strategized by the other teams. But, you know, when we asked him about Rally Chile, I thought this was a bizarre answer. We talked about Rally Chile and its place on the calendar, and he said, well, yeah, but they have to look at a few things. You know, Friday's, Saturday stages were too rough and too long. Absolute nonsense, in my view. Absolute nonsense.
He then, you know, qualified it with actually a very, very, yeah, a very good point in saying that from kilometre one on Saturday morning,
people were looking after tyres. But I don't care for that. You know, I don't care for that. That's what rallying has always been about. You know, if we want to be a rally sprint championship, I'll 100% agree with Jari-Matti. But we're not. You know, rallying in the past, and Jari-Matti knows this better than anyone. It's always been a bit about strategy, about tyre strategy, about your driver approach, about changing your style to suit the stages, about not always being 100% on the throttle. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the drama that gave us on Saturday. And it was an absolutely enthralling day. And I'd be disappointed if they went into their selection, their route selection for next year, with that as the priority. Yeah, look at it. But don't make it your priority, because what you gave us, Rally Chile, this year was fantastic for the championship.
Yeah, I agree. I've got to say, I was slightly surprised at Jari-Matti from a purist perspective, but you can see from a corporate side, it was difficult. But yeah, for me, you all have 6 hard tyres. Manage them the best you can.
Yeah.
It's a big part of of the sport that we're in.
We've taken too many variables out of it. We've taken too many variables out of the sport already, and I don't think we should be continually looking.
But the teams want to manage out those variables, don't they? Because the more variables, the less you can actually predict performance. So take out the variables. It's much easier if everybody's on exactly the same time.
Let's take out all the variables and let's just go round and round the circuit with these cars. Let's take out all the variables and do that.
That's exactly.
And what will we call that? Oh, rallycross. Kind of.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, no, I wasn't sure about that. But anyway, Yari Matty, we love you. So, and we love your opinions on things, Yari Matty, we really do. Elvin Evans, let's talk about him. His chances of winning the Drivers' Championship are still remarkably slim. But, importantly, going into CER and the final two rounds on tarmac, he still has a chance. Wasn't his best weekend here, and he admitted that himself at the end. He just didn't find perhaps the pace he was looking for. But, yeah, he goes away knowing he can still win, potentially. Is that any consolation to him? Maybe not.
He can still win. Mm. And stranger things have happened. You only have to look back to 98 with Tommy Mäkinen.
Yes.
It's really not over till it's over, is it? So he's done the right thing. He's absolutely stuck with it. He didn't take massive risks because, for the 100th time of saying, if he drops it in a ditch and ends up with a zero, you know, the show's over.
Yeah. 2006. What happened in 2006? Didn't result in tremendous...
Was that Loeb's...
Loeb with the falling off the mountain bike.
Yeah. It was actually a motorbike.
Was it a motorbike?
Yeah.
Did it come out originally as a mountain bike?
Well, yeah, because in his contract
he wasn't allowed. But you're right, anything can yet happen. Your Cali Rovanperä is going drifting and all the rest. I mean, he is the master of all of these things, but you never know what might happen. He does have to stick at it, that's for sure.
All rallying, one source. By now, you know that dirtfish.com is the place to go for all of your rallying news. But when it's time to try your hand behind the wheel, just join us here at Dirtfish Rally School, nestled in the Cascade Mountains in Snoqualmie, Washington. Whether you're a pro seeking extra seat time or a novice looking to get started, we've got programs tailored to all rallying needs. And when you want to watch the best in the world, just head over to our YouTube channel. Our coverage of the WRC and American rallying is second to none. Follow us at Dirtfish Rally across all social media platforms and shop the latest looks in our merchandise store now. As always, rally on.
Should we move on to Hyundai?
Yes.
Let's move on to Hyundai. Looked like a strong weekend for them. They looked like they were going to secure, behind Oik Tänak, a double podium. You know, Neuville struggled a wee bit all weekend, but he got into a rhythm, found the pace, did what we really expect Neuville to do, which is consistently bang in a podium result. But the driver for me for the weekend from Hyundai was Teemu Suninen. Can we say that? He was brilliant Friday, he was brilliant Saturday, but what an error. What a mistake to make on Sunday morning. Has that completely negated what went before it?
No, it can't.
No, I agree.
It can't, because he demonstrated the ability to drive at a pace, okay, in slightly different road conditions that neither of his teammates, who have far, far more experience of the car, certainly of the Pirelli hard tyre, than he does.
Mm.
That has to mean something. And it does. You spoke to Cyril Abitbol, team principal at Hyundai. It does mean something. And there's no question that Teemu's out of the picture for next year. He's not. He's very firmly in the picture for a seat next year.
Mm.
And rightly so. Nobody will hurt more tonight than Teemu Suninen himself.
Mm.
He knows he made a mistake. He has to learn from that. He has to move on. The frustration for me was that he wasn't then in the absolute white heat of a massive fight. If that happened on the first stage this morning, perhaps it would have been more forgivable.
More understandable.
More understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because at that point, he was desperate to fight with Thierry and to take that position. The fact that Thierry had taken time out of him, he should have kind of thought,
he should have gone,
okay,
yeah,
enough.
Yeah.
Let's. Equally, there is also the case that Hyundai called this one wrong and should have just said, no, sorry, look, stop it. We want two cars on a podium. We want a double podium. That's worth shouting about.
It was kind of mixed messaging, wasn't it? And this is the thing. So we've heard Lappi's frustration at the team orders this year. Lappi has done what he's been asked to do, rightly so. But there's definitely been frustration there. And at the start of the year with Craig in Sweden, you know, a little bit of frustration. The strange thing here, though, is that it appears that they were both given the green light to go out. There wasn't going to be any swapping of positions. But had there been a decision to swap positions, then Sunderland would have finished this rally.
Well, exactly.
He would have finished it. He would have finished it. He would have finished it.
In many ways, you know, I said to him last night, I said, you've done the good work.
Mm.
You've demonstrated what you can do. Now, is it not just sensible just to say, enough?
Mm.
There you go, Mr. Unbeatable. I've done the job.
There's your points.
There's your points. Mm-hmm. That you've seen my performance. There's no point me absolutely going hell for leather against Thierry tomorrow. Let's be sensible. But actually, that's probably one of the reasons I'm not a world champion, because they want everything. They want, and Tamey put it quite rightly himself, he had the chance to have a fight.
It's for me, though, it is about decisions. And you know, the difference between great champions and your drivers who don't quite make great champions quite often is decision-making and making the wrong decision at the most important time. And it happened quite a lot with Chris Meek, sadly, making the wrong decisions. And Timo, I love Timo, I really do, and I want to see him back, and I want to see what he
even
can do.
Even
though I ignored him this morning, oops. What a bit of a faux pas that was. But, you know, I think back to Portugal a couple of years ago, WRC2, you know, heading into the final stage, the power stage. He'd won the rally, he was miles ahead.
Yeah.
But he was desperate to prove a point and score power stage points and to win the power stage, and went off on the third corner.
Yeah.
Really poor decision making. Should have just accepted the win. This morning, you know, should have perhaps accepted the reality of the situation and taken third place. You know, it is about making the right decisions at those critical moments. And Sunderland made the wrong decision.
He did.
But I'm not going to be too hard on him, because I do like him, and I've liked the cut of his jib, David, since we've seen him return at Hyundai.
He's done a good
What does that mean, cut of his jib? Is that to do with, is that a sailing term?
Potentially.
I don't know. You're the wordsmith.
No idea.
No, cut of his jib, is it to do with a sharp suit?
I don't know.
I
do not know. but I would agree. We talked to him this morning about, you know, what did you think of Finland? And he was like, oh, I was a bit disappointed with Finland. I don't... Okay, yes, because he wanted the podium. But for me, he did a great job in Finland.
I thought so.
He did the job that the team required. And because he did that job, he's here now. And he will be here in CER in a few weeks.
And so, I think the job application has gone well. I think it's gone well, and I think in some form or another we will see Sunderland as part of that team next year.
I would absolutely agree.
Yeah, let's see what happens. So that's our top WRC teams, David. A final word. Well, we'll save a final word for Rally Chile, but our penultimate word for our WRC 2 winner, Oliver Solberg, however you want to pronounce it. We saw a slightly different Oliver Solberg here in terms of his World Rally Championship performances. We saw a very, very strategic Solberg, a thoughtful Solberg, at times a patient Solberg.
Yeah.
Really, really top qualities to demonstrate if you want to show that you're a world-class driver.
I think you've got the word in one there, patience. We've seen, there's no doubting Oliver Solberg's speed. You look, he's set countless, I don't know how many fastest stage times in Rally 2 cars this year. He's basically blown everybody out of the water in terms of the stages he's won and the stages that he's led. Obviously, he's not always competing in WRC 2, but those statistics are quite incredible, what he's done there. His speed demonstrated with sixth overall and a monster win in Finland. A few weeks ago, or a couple of months ago. But what he did here was almost as important as anything he's done this year. He demonstrated the ability to think. And, you know, I remember in 2003, the great Sir Clive Woodward, when he guided England to a magnificent victory in the Rugby World Cup.
Those do seem a long way away, don't they?
Shut up.
Many years behind you.
Be quiet.
Many years behind
you. For Woodward, the big thing was teacup. Think clearly under pressure. And that's exactly
teacup.
Think clearly under pressure. That's exactly what he did on Saturday afternoon. Everybody else around him was taking seconds.
Yeah.
Taking seconds out of him, nibbling away and just getting on with it. He had a strategy and he thought very clearly under pressure, I am not going to stress the tyres. I'm not going to push the car too hard. I want to get to that final stage on Saturday with four good tires.
And he said they were new tyres when we spoke to him. They were the best of best condition.
Yep, he got there and look what he did.
Incredible.
To take, okay, Paiari's tyres, we know, were shot, but to take 47 seconds or something out of him in 28K is quite remarkable. And even Gus Greensmith, 17 seconds behind. It was brilliant for me all season.
It was a demonstration of just how good he is.
He is that good, and he deserves to be in Rally 1, I think, in some ways.
He deserves an opportunity again. He deserves, when an opportunity avails itself, often he deserves it. He deserves it.
For me, there was always that question last year when he was in the Rally 1 car that potentially it had come too soon. And did he maybe need another year of Rally 2? And you look back at Calle Rovanperä's career, obviously there are direct comparisons between the two. Calle's career was very structured. We know now that he had a Toyota agreement from the age of 16 or something, so they knew exactly where. So he did the year in the Fiesta, then he went into the Skoda, and there was no rush because he knew what was coming. And he could learn his craft. He could take experience from rallies. I do feel...
But no, David, I'm going to disagree with you here. I don't think it was too early. I think the timing was just wrong. I think had he had that opportunity at the same point in his career with the last year of the previous World Rally cars,
he'd
have been fine. I think the fact he came into a team in absolute and utter turmoil with a dreadful car, infighting going on, he had no chance of succeeding.
With a car that gassed him in the first round.
With a car, he had absolutely no chance of succeeding. And we must never, ever forget that. It wasn't... You know, Solberg made a silly mistake in Finland, and a lot of people define that year for Solberg with that mistake in Finland. Nonsense. The defining factor was just how awful and how bad an atmosphere there was in that Hyundai
team. And how badly he was managed.
Badly treated, the fact
that he didn't get pre-event tested, the fact that he wasn't allowed to run with his own setup. It was very, very difficult.
By the way, David, I've come up with Sunin's, the answer to Sunin's problem.
What?
You know where I live. I live in the teacup capital of the world. I am going to get a teacup for Sunin for CER.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because it's exactly what you said. What was it? Think clearly under pressure. What does that mean? You think clearly under pressure, you make the right decisions.
Yes.
So he needs a teacup to help him make the right decisions and to remind him to make the right decisions. Any special designs I should go for? What about that place you like?
Emma Bridgewater.
Maybe an Emma Bridgewater teacup.
Nice. Yeah.
Anyway, there we go. So there we are, folks. Final words, David, on Rally Chile Biobío.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Great event. Unbelievably fabulous to be back in South America.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it down here. It's great, and it's just a cool place. We said this time and again this week, to be popping over the top of the Andes, sitting alongside the Pacific, it's wicked.
Yeah,
it's
it really
just
is
what
wicked.
The World Championship's about.
Yep, I concur entirely. It has been a wonderful rally. Folks, you've been listening to Spin the Rally Pod. Don't forget dirtfish.com. You may well be listening to this on Tuesday, and there may well be a very big story breaking. If you are listening on Tuesday and you haven't come across that story, head to dirtfish.com. Double-check your inbox for your podcasts as well, because there is a very, very special podcast available for you this week. Folks, from Rally Chile Biobío, for myself, from David Evans, from the whole Dirtfish team, it's been a pleasure.